Welcome back to another deep dive, especially to you, the ever-curious learner who joins us every time to make sense of a very noisy world. I want you to imagine for a second that you only ever eat at one single restaurant your entire life.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, just you sit at the exact same table, you order from the exact same menu day in and day out.
I mean, that sounds incredibly limiting. And honestly, just beyond boring. You're missing out on a massive world of flavor.
Right. Not only are you missing out on incredible global cuisines, but think about the sheer risk involved.
Yeah, the risk of it.
What happens if their kitchen catches fire? Or, you know, the head chef quits? Or the neighborhood suddenly goes downhill? You're going to starve.
You really are.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Keeping all your money invested solely in your home country is exactly like eating at that one restaurant.
That's a perfect way to visualize it, because when we look at the big picture of international finance, global diversification isn't just some aggressive Wall Street tactic to chase the highest possible returns.
Right. It's not just about getting rich quick.
Exactly. It's fundamentally a defensive strategy.
Right.
It's about aligning your investments with your personal risk tolerance, your specific financial goals, and your time horizon.
Spreading it out.
Yeah, you spread your capital around the world so that when one specific kitchen does catch fire, say a domestic recession or a localized housing crash, your entire portfolio doesn't just go up in smoke with it.
And that is the underlying mission of today's deep dive. We are unpacking an incredibly comprehensive stack of research, primarily anchored by a source called Global Strategic Investment, a guide to international markets.
It's a really fascinating guide.
It really is. And the overarching premise we pulled from this material is simple. In today's shifting global economy, previously booming regions are cooling down while entirely new corners of the globe are surging.
Yeah, the map is changing.
So our goal today is to shortcut your path to being a well-informed global investor.
And that journey really starts by zooming out and looking at the map. Before we can even begin to decide what to buy, we have to understand where it is actually safe and strategic to put our capital.
Right. You don't just throw darts at a globe.
No, definitely not. You have to evaluate the macroeconomic foundations that make a country a viable option in the first place.
Looking at the data here, it's clear that your absolute first filter needs to be political and economic stability. We are talking about regions with strong legal systems, steady governments, and a proven track record of economic resilience.
Absolutely.
The research specifically highlights the United States, Germany, and Singapore as topping the list of investor-friendly countries.
And, you know, that tracks perfectly with historical trends. Those are countries with really deep institutional frameworks.
Meaning what exactly?
Well, it means if you buy a property or a share of a business there, the rule of law guarantees your ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But what's fascinating here is that the quote-unquote safest country politically might actually carry a massive hidden risk in another area.
Ah, right. The currency stuff.
Yes. You always, always have to consider currency and inflation risk.
Yes. This was one of the biggest aha moments in the material for me.
Yeah.
So let me make sure I understand the mechanics of this.
Sure. Go for it.
Say I do everything right. I pick a brilliant tech stock in a foreign country, say Japan. I watch the stock price go up 10% over the year.
Sounds good so far.
Right. But during that same year, the local currency, the yen, drops 15% in value compared to my home currency. Am I actually losing money when I bring those profits home? Is that how that works?
I mean, that is the exact blind spot that catches so many new international investors off guard. Yes, you lose money.
Wow. Even though the stock went up.
Yeah, your actual investment gained value locally. But when you execute the trade and convert those Japanese yen back into U.S. dollars or euros or Saudi riyals, the unfavorable exchange rate completely swallows your 10% stock gain.
Ouch.
And then it takes another 5% of your principal.
So the local currency weakened against my money, and poof, my returns just vanish into the ether during the conversion at the bank.
Exactly. Which is why our sources emphasize looking for countries that utilize incredibly stable currencies, like the U.S. dollar, the euro, or the Swiss franc.
They act as a sort of shield, right?
Yeah, holding assets in those currencies acts as a natural buffer. It mitigates that hidden layer of exchange rate risk, preserving your actual purchasing power.
But here's the catch. Even if a country has a rock-solid government and a bulletproof currency, they might not actually want you doing business there.
Oh, absolutely.
The research spends a lot of time on market access and sector strength. Some countries practically roll out the red carpet for foreign money, while others hit you with heavy taxes or strictly limit what sectors you are legally allowed to buy into.
It's a crucial variable, you know? Different regions of the world excel in entirely different areas due to their geography, workforce, or government subsidies.
Like specialization.
Right. One country might have an incredibly robust open real estate market, while another might be heavily leaning into green energy or artificial intelligence, but they want to keep the ownership domestic.
So if you're passionate about, say, green energy, you shouldn't just look for a politically stable country. You need to look for a politically stable country that actually embraces foreign investment specifically in their green energy sector.
It is always a balancing act of risk and opportunity. You are trying to find the intersection where your personal investment thesis aligns with the country's economic strengths and, well, the regulatory welcome mat.
All right, so let's move down the funnel. Let's assume we've scoured the map, we've found a politically stable country with a strong currency, and they actually let foreigners participate in their strongest sectors.
Okay, the foundation is set.
The next logical step is the what. What specific vehicle or asset are you going to use to enter that market?
Right, the actual investment.
The research provides quite a menu here, categorized by what you actually want the money to do for you.
Well, if your primary goal is direct, long-term growth, the data strongly points towards stocks and exchange-traded funds, or ETFs.
For long-term equity growth, they highlight well-established massive markets like the US, Japan, and Germany. But there's a strong emphasis on ETFs rather than picking individual stocks.
Oh, heavily emphasized.
Yeah.
I assume that's because trying to research 50 different German manufacturing companies from your laptop in another country is basically impossible.
Yeah, it requires an immense amount of localized knowledge that most retail investors simply do not possess.
Right. I don't speak German or know their local trends.
Exactly. An ETF solves this by allowing you to buy a prepackaged basket of stocks across an entire sector, or even tracking an entire country's financial index.
Where you're buying a tiny slice of everything.
Yes. By holding tiny fractions of hundreds of companies, you dilute the risk of any single company going bankrupt and taking your portfolio down with it.
Makes total sense. But let's pivot to the heavy hitter for income and capital appreciation, which is real estate.
A favorite for a lot of people.
For sure. The sources call out specific examples like buy-to-let properties in Dubai and commercial properties in the UK. The indicators you want to look for are high rental yields, obvious population growth, and major urban development plans.
Real estate is, you know, the traditional anchor of generational wealth. It provides a tangible, physical asset that historically appreciates over decades.
Plus the rent checks.
Right, paired with the potential for ongoing monthly rental income. But of course, physical property isn't the only option.
What else we got?
For investors who are focused purely on stability and the preservation of the capital they already have, the data suggests government and corporate bonds.
And there's an interesting mechanical distinction made here regarding bonds. Developed markets offer lower risk, while emerging markets offer higher returns with more volatility.
Yes, it's a key point.
Can we break down the why behind that?
It's the classic risk-reward trade-off acting in real time. Think of a bond as you loaning money to a government.
Yeah.
If you buy a bond from a highly developed European nation, your return might only be 2 or 3%, but it is nearly guaranteed because their tax base is incredibly stable.
Right. They aren't going anywhere.
Now, if you buy a bond from a rapidly developing nation that has political instability, they might have to offer you an 8 or 9% interest rate.
To make it tempting enough.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That higher yield is essentially a premium they are paying you to justify the very real risk that their government might default on the loan.
Got it. You are getting paid for taking on their political anxiety.
Precisely.
And then there is the final category in the menu, alternative assets. This includes things like REITs, which are real estate investment trusts, private equity, and tokenized or fractional real estate. And I have to say, this is where I start to get a little anxious.
Really? Why is that?
Well, clicking a button on a brokerage app to buy an ETF is one thing, but buying an actual physical buy-to-let apartment in Dubai or a commercial office space in London from thousands of miles away?
It sounds daunting.
It sounds like a logistical and legal nightmare waiting to happen. I mean, how do you manage a leaky roof or a broken boiler in the UK when you live in Riyadh or New York?
You're hitting on the exact friction point that keeps 99% of people out of international markets.
It just feels too hard.
You are entirely right. It can be an absolute nightmare. If you ignore the legal and financial realities, the international red tape will wipe out your profits before they even clear your bank account.
Our source material actually dedicates a massive section to this specific nightmare. Let's walk through the legal and financial landscape, starting with everyone's favorite topic, taxes.
Oh yeah, tax treatment is arguably the biggest blind spot for new international investors. The research points out that many foreign countries apply withholding tax on dividends or rental income.
Meaning the foreign government takes their cut of your rent money before it even leaves their borders.
Yeah, exactly. And then you also have capital gains taxes that apply specifically to foreign investors when they eventually sell that physical asset.
Just layer after layer of taxes.
Right. But the most critical piece of paper you need to understand is the double taxation agreement, or DTA.
I loved this concept when I was reading through the notes. It's basically a treaty between two countries.
Yes, it is.
So a double taxation agreement is essentially a permission slip signed by two different school principals, ensuring you don't get detention in both countries for the exact same thing.
That is a brilliant analogy. To put it in mechanical terms, if you earn rental income in the UK, the UK government is going to tax it.
Naturally.
When you bring that money back to your home country, your local government will also want to tax it as income.
So you get hit twice.
Unless those two countries have a DTA in place. If they do, your home country will look at the taxes you already paid in the UK and issue you a credit.
Oh, nice.
The credits offset each other across borders, so you are only paying the tax burden once. If you invest somewhere without a DPA, you get taxed twice on the exact same dollar, which completely destroys your investment yield.
And that's assuming you can even get the money out of the country in the first place. We need to talk about capital controls and currency repatriation.
Oh, yes. The exit strategy.
Because you have to check if a central bank actually allows you to transfer your profits home.
Capital controls are very real, and they are used by developing nations to prevent their local currency from collapsing.
How does that work in practice?
Well, a country might warmly welcome your foreign investment capital to build a factory, but when you try to pull your millions in profit out of their banking system, the central bank might step in and say, no, you can only withdraw $50,000 a month.
Wow.
Yeah, they trap your capital to maintain their own financial stability.
The sources also mention using hedging tools if you are operating in a volatile currency, just to ensure the money holds its value during these transfers. Is hedging basically like buying financial insurance?
Spot on. You pay a small premium up front to buy a financial contract that locks in today's exchange rate.
Okay, so it protects you from sudden drops.
Right, so if you're waiting 3 months for a property sale to clear and the local currency crashes tomorrow, your profits are protected because your hedging contract guarantees the old favorable rate.
Okay, what about ownership rules? You might think you're buying a piece of land, but some countries strictly restrict foreigners from holding the deed directly.
That's a big hurdle in some markets.
The data notes that in some places, you are legally forced to use government-approved trust agencies to make the purchase on your behalf.
Which, as you can imagine, introduces entirely new layers of fees, bureaucracy, and potential regulatory hurdles.
Just more red tape.
Exactly. This is why our sources stress the importance of platform regulations. If you are using a digital broker or an investment platform to bypass these trust agencies, it is absolutely vital that the platform is regulated in both your home country and the country you are investing in.
Otherwise, if the platform goes under, you have zero capital protection. Mm-hmm. Your money is just gone.
Poof. The legal and financial planning isn't the glamorous part of investing. Nobody likes talking about withholding taxes.
No, definitely not.
But it's usually the difference between a smooth, profitable experience and a very, very costly lesson in international law.
Okay, we know the rules of the game. We know how to protect ourselves from double taxation, currency fluctuations, and capital controls.
So where do we play?
Exactly. If we apply all of that, what does the actual playing field look like right now? The research provides a really impartial, data-driven framework of specific global hotspots for 2025.
And it does a great job of presenting both the bull case and the bear case for each region.
Which I appreciate. Let's start with the largest market, the United States.
Okay, the U.S.
The data lists the U.S. as the ultimate global tech hub. It has incredibly deep, liquid financial markets and the strongest legal protections in the world.
It's a powerhouse.
The best investment options they highlight are stocks, ETFs, and prime commercial real estate.
But if we apply a risk framework, there are downsides.
There always are.
For a foreign investor, you have massive currency exposure if the dollar fluctuates, and the U.S. has a notoriously complex tax code regarding capital gains levied on foreigners.
So if an investor wants a more stable currency and perhaps a different industrial focus, we cross the Atlantic to Germany.
A very different vibe.
The research highlights Germany for its stable economy, its legendary manufacturing strength, and its aggressive transition toward green energy.
Right.
The recommended assets here are bonds, industrial property, and ESG-focused funds.
I should clarify ESG real quick. That stands for environmental, social, and governance.
Oh, thank you.
It means investing in companies that prioritize sustainability, which is a massive government priority in Germany right now.
Right.
The trade-off for all this German stability, however, is slower overall economic growth compared to emerging markets and famously high taxation rates.
Which naturally pushes us to ask, if Germany gives us safety but slow growth, where does the data point investors who want the exact opposite?
Those who want explosive growth.
Yeah, those who are willing to stomach more risk for rapid explosive growth.
That leads directly to the emerging markets, specifically India.
India is highlighted for its incredibly fast-growing economy, a booming domestic tech sector, and a rapidly rising middle class that is driving consumption.
The growth numbers there are staggering.
The recommendations are tech stocks, infrastructure projects, and long-term equities.
But the risks in India are the exact bureaucratic nightmares we discussed earlier.
Right, the red tape.
The analysis specifically calls out heavy, complex red tape for foreign businesses and significant currency volatility with the rupee as the primary hurdles.
The guide also points to Vietnam as a major 2025 hotspot. It's seen as a direct export-driven alternative to China.
Driven by the supply chain shift.
Exactly. Fueled by global supply chains, shifting their manufacturing to take advantage of low labor costs. They recommend emerging market funds and residential property.
However, Vietnam presents severe liquidity concerns.
Meaning what exactly? If I buy an asset there, it's hard to get rid of it.
Precisely. You might buy a residential property in a growing Vietnamese city, but when you want to cash out, the market might not have enough qualified buyers with access to capital.
So you're just stuck holding it.
Your money is stuck in the bricks. Add to that a very high level of regulatory complexity for outsiders, and it requires a long time horizon.
Finally, we get to the Gulf region. The research splits this dynamic into two major players, the UAE and Saudi Arabia.
Both very exciting right now.
For the UAE, the massive draw is highly investor-friendly laws and major tax advantages. There is massive international property demand, so the data suggests rental apartments, off-plan developments, and REITs.
The risk flagged for the UAE, specifically in hyper-developed areas like Dubai, is market saturation.
Too many buildings.
Yeah. There is always the potential for short-term oversupply in the real estate sector if development outpaces the influx of new residents.
And right next door, we have Saudi Arabia. The primary catalyst here is Vision 2030, which is fundamentally altering the economic landscape.
It's a massive transformation.
We are talking about massive state-backed infrastructure investment and sweeping economic reforms to diversify away from oil.
Huge projects.
The guide recommends REITs, infrastructure funds, and tokenized assets utilizing newly regulated platforms.
The counterbalance noted for Saudi Arabia is that the non-oil financial market is still maturing.
Okay, so it's a bit new.
Right. That means there is currently limited asset diversification available for a retail investor compared to a deeply established, century-old market like the U.S.
So, bringing this all together, we have massive established tech hubs like the U.S. on one side and incredibly fast-growing dynamic emerging markets like India and Saudi Arabia on the other.
It's quite a spectrum.
It is. But this brings me back to my main frustration from earlier. Places like the UK and Dubai have these lucrative, tangible real estate markets. Saudi Arabia is undergoing a historic infrastructure boom.
Right.
But how does an average listener, someone who does not have generational wealth, who doesn't have a family office managing their taxes, actually get a foothold in these physical assets?
Yeah, it is impossible.
How do you buy property in these hotspots without getting buried in the red tape, the capital controls, and the leaky roofs?
It is the most important question we can ask about accessibility. For decades, international real estate and major infrastructure projects were walled gardens.
VIPs only.
Exactly. They were playgrounds exclusively for institutional investors, hedge funds, or ultra-high net worth individuals who could afford teams of lawyers.
The big guys.
But the research introduces a technological solution to this exact pain point, specialized digital investment platforms.
And the material focuses heavily on one specific platform operating as a solution here. Osul Gamma.
Yes. Osul Gamma is presented as a digital bridge. It is a specialized platform that offers fractional asset-backed opportunities in established international real estate markets.
I have to say, reading about this felt like a massive paradigm shift.
It really is.
Fractional ownership means you can essentially own a legally backed slice of an international commercial property for the price of a fancy dinner.
Which is wild to think about.
The guide explicitly states you can get started on Osul Gamma with as little as $500 US or Saudi rials. You literally do not need generational wealth to hold international bullion-mortar assets anymore.
And beyond the incredibly low financial barrier to entry, it solves the logistical and legal nightmare you were stressing over earlier.
Thank goodness.
The platform itself handles the cross-border compliance. Furthermore, it operates within strict trust frameworks.
Right.
It is Sharia compliant and heavily regulated by the CMA.
The Capital Market Authority, which is a huge trust signal. So it bridges that exact gap for Gulf investors, or really anyone globally who is worried about navigating foreign withholding taxes, local ownership laws, and repatriation limits.
That is the beauty of the model. You aren't flying to London to inspect a broken boiler, and you aren't hiring a German tax attorney to decipher local withholding rates.
Sounds like a relief.
It is.
Yeah.
The platform aggregates the capital from thousands of investors, legally acquires the asset, manages all the localized compliance and property management, and then distributes the fractional rental yields and capital gains back to your digital wallet.
So it's totally passive.
It allows for a completely hands-off approach to geographic diversification.
It takes all those terrifying, complex concepts we just spent 20 minutes discussing, double taxation agreements, capital controls, foreign ownership restrictions, and essentially abstracts them away through technology.
If we connect this to the broader evolution of global finance, platforms like this fundamentally democratize wealth building.
It levels the playing field.
You are taking these structural defensive advantages of international real estate, the stable income, the long-term capital appreciation, the currency diversification, and making it accessible from a smartphone while standing in line for coffee.
It really changes the math for the average investor. So to bring the mission of today's deep dive full circle.
Yeah, let's sum it up.
International investing is not about chasing the absolute highest, riskiest return. It's not about blindly throwing money at a trending country you saw on social media.
Definitely not.
It is about thoughtfully aligning your personal financial goals with the right mix of global assets to protect yourself. It requires understanding the underlying mechanics, the taxes, the currencies, the regulations, and then utilizing modern regulated tools to actually make those markets accessible and safe.
That is a phenomenal summary of the research. And honestly, looking at how fast this digital asset space is evolving, it leaves me with a rather profound, perhaps slightly disruptive thought to consider.
Oh, I love these. Lay it on us.
Well, we've talked extensively today about buying fractional shares of international property using digital platforms to bypass borders.
Right.
But imagine a future, perhaps not that far off, where every physical asset in the world, from a commercial office building in London to a sprawling solar farm in Germany to a massive infrastructure project in India, is tokenized into a liquid, instantly tradable digital asset on your phone.
Every single thing.
Every physical asset. If geography completely disappears from the mechanics of investing, will the concept of a local economy even exist for the next generation?
Wow. If anyone, anywhere, can own a fraction of anything everywhere, that completely rewrites what it means to be a local stakeholder in a community.
It really does.
That is an incredible thought to end on. Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning, keep learning, and remember, don't spend your whole life eating at just one restaurant.
Mm. Go try the menu somewhere else.
Because if that kitchen catches fire, you want to make sure you have a table waiting for you somewhere else in the world. Catch you next time.